Hey, Adultish fam, it's Naj. I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods visited four California prisons, and they gathered funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who were grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also, coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom and daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you listen to Adultish.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome to Adultish, produced by YR Media and brought to you by Radiotopia from PRX. I'm Dominique French.
And I'm Nige Turner. I know it's a loaded question, but Dom, can you tell me about a time when you didn't feel Black enough?
Yes. Recently, I went to a new nail salon, a very Black nail salon, and I brought my little white mom with me. And the whole time, I was like, oh my God, should I not have brought my white mom? Like, feeling very uncool. Their, like, specialty was, like, very out there, very trippy, very long nails. So I went there to get an alien acrylic set. And I was like, is this dumb? I don't know. So I was sitting there. And my mom points to a sign on the wall, and she's like, oh, ha, ha, ha. It says, like, N-E-V-A, basic set, $80. And my mom's name is Neva, N-E-V-A. So we were like, oh, what are the odds? Ha, 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 ha. And the person doing my nails is like, oh, that's just our slang, you know, for, like, never basic. And, like, everyone's like, hee-hee-hee, and I'm like, ha, ha, ha. Like, laughing the loudest to try and, like, overcompensate for the fact that I did not get that. And later, my mom even clowns me for not getting that. And I was like, I am truly not Black enough. I was like, even my mom got the joke about the slang. And here I was, like, trying to go get my nails done at a Black salon for the first time and totally, like, being outed as a fraud.
I can relate to that, though. I remember just being at family functions and hanging out with my cousins and stuff like that. The way that I dressed, you know, they would always be like, oh, like, you out here, you know, dressing white and yada, 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 because I'll wear, like, skinny jeans and all of that.
On that skater life.
I told you before, I was a real skater kid. And I honestly didn't know, like, a ton about Black culture. All the newest music and everything like that was out, or people like making, you know, references to like movies that I just didn't see like growing up. And so I always felt like kind of left out of like all the jokes and references. But yeah, so I definitely can identify with that. Do you still feel like you're not Black enough, or do you feel like that changed over time?
Well, considering this thing at the nail salon happened probably like 3 days ago, I don't think I've like fully become Black enough in that 3 day period.
Since 3 days, last 3 days,
everything's turned around in these last 3 days. I wish. No, I still constantly, you know, every day feel like there's something I don't get. There's, you know, a movie I haven't seen. There's a historical figure I should know about that I don't, and it's. It's hard to feel Black enough when you constantly feel out of the loop.
Yeah. I feel like high school was when I started to feel Black enough.
I love that for
one, because there wasn't a lot of Black kids at my high school. Mm-hmm. So, like,
there wasn't a lot of competition.
With the black kids that were there, they were like, yeah, like we kind of got to accept you. Like we low in numbers right now. But it was like a process. Like, so remember how I mentioned like all the different movies and things like that? Like I had to go and rewatch all these different movies. Like my dad would have like days where we would just sit down and watch like Coolie High and The Five Heartbeats and like all these movies where I
writing these down.
So I could just, no, but really that's like, I was watching them and I was like, okay. I gotta like, okay, yeah. Ain't nobody come here to see you, Tito. Okay. And like I would go to the barbershop and I'd say that and like people be like,
it would kill. It would absolutely kill.
So I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. We in there. Yeah. I feel like everyone's story is so different, but it's interesting that you and I both experience feelings that we're not measuring up culturally.
And that's why we wanted to break down this topic further and see how other people felt. So we sat down with Lila Day and Hina Abava, host of The Stoop, one of our favorite podcasts on Blackness.
Hey, I'm Hina Abava. I am an audio journalist. My day job is at NPR station KLW in San Francisco. I host Cross Currents, the news magazine on there. And the rest of my waking and sleeping hours, I am a co-host of The Stoop podcast, Stories from Across the Black Diaspora. I'm also a mom and a Sudanese American Californian. That's my new thing that I'm saying.
That sounds so sexy and so, you know.
It flowed.
It really flows. I really like that.
I've now officially spent most of the years of my life living in California.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a Californian.
Yep.
There you go.
You sure are. I'm Lila Day. I am a co-host of the Stoop podcast with Hana, and I'm African American, grew up in Las Vegas in the desert, wandering around with turtles and rabbits. Yeah, I am also a executive producer at a podcast network called Pineapple Street Media, where I make podcasts for other people aside from myself. Yeah, I used to work with Hana at KALW, where she currently works. We were both journalists in the same newsroom, and that's how we met, is talking schmack while heating up our Trader Joe's lunches, right? In the microwave. So yeah, that's my story.
I'm very curious how creating The Stoop has informed your relationship with your own Blackness and Blackness in general.
It's been so interesting, like how we come up with different episodes. Like literally we'll sit there and say, what is something that we don't talk about that we need to talk about, that we might be a little bit ashamed of talking about, that we might be embarrassed about bringing up in public. And for me, it's really opened me up in a way, because I have had conversations with Hana and with thousands of listeners that I do not know that are just listening to us have these conversations about things that I really wouldn't always bring up, you know, definitely not in the public radio world, right, Hana? I mean, these were stories that we often were like, you know, told those are too personal. Who's your audience for that story?
We couldn't hear them. We can't hear it.
We can't hear it. We can't quite
hear
it.
That was something that was told,
Yeah. So for me, that's kind of what it's done for me. It's really given me the confidence to actually have these conversations and feel like I can. I was telling someone the other day that making this podcast has been a bit like therapy. It's been very therapeutic just to kind of let things out and be very personal about things that I normally would hold back on. What about you, Hana? Oh, sorry. I'm not doing the interview here.
What about you, Hana?
We're used to interviewing, not getting interviewed.
I know,
sorry.
This is so different.
You know, I'm a daughter of African immigrants. And so for me, it was always this question of, well, what is Black in America? And who is Black in America? Can I call myself Black? And so, you know, from the get-go, I think the premise of The Stoop is that Black is not a monolith and we're all different kinds of Black. And we're going to talk about all these issues from these different perspectives of Blackness. I think for me, it's always been this idea of, well, what am I? And what? Where do I fit in? Where do my children fit in this kind of world of Black in America? And this question of being Black enough, like as an immigrant, as a child of immigrants to this country, am I Black? I also have learned a lot while kind of doing these inquiries into who we are and identity and all of this. I grew up in Texas, right? But my parents are from Sudan, and I did go live in Sudan. And it's sort of like, I feel equally both. And that's where the complexity comes in. And every time I'm learning something new about myself.
The level of personal story and candidness that you both reach in the show is so unlike what we're taught as like journalists and like storytellers to do, like when you're kind of coming up, that I think really reflects how most journalism and storytelling is made to reflect whiteness. And it's like, it's so much about removing the self and reflecting like a larger picture. But when it comes to your show and shows that I feel like are important, injecting the self, the narrative of like the Black person, the person of color, I think is so important and so beautiful. And you both just do it in such an incredible way with so much bravery. I can't compliment what you two do enough. It's gorgeous.
Is that a question?
No.
Just a statement.
Do you agree?
I mean, I just want to comment on that.
Do you agree?
I want to comment on kind of the idea behind that statement, which is I personally didn't grow up in an audio journalism education environment where we were encouraged to be ourselves.
Yeah.
Or to talk like we normally talk, or to sound conversational. I grew
exactly.
up, I went to this school where it was like, erase your accents. And they weren't even talking about international accents. They were talking about American regional accents that they didn't want people sounding like that, right? They wanted neutral American English, whatever that meant, right? Like it sounded like the broadcast journalist that you hear on the radio from the 80s and the 90s. And so that's what I personally learned. That was my first kind of education in how I should sound, is that I should throw away my real voice. And so I think that it was important for us on the stoop to purposefully say, we are journalists and we sound like this. We are journalists and we're going to talk about these things in this way.
Exactly.
And we are still journalists, even if we do that.
Earlier, you said we can't hear you was a comment that you heard a lot too. What did they mean, that the audience wouldn't be able to relate?
I think what we were saying is it was more about we can't relate to you. Not necessarily, you know, we don't understand what story you're trying to tell, because it's very clear in the pitch. It's very clear in the reporting. It's very clear just, you know, when you compare it to all the other stories that we would produce. But it's often a phrase that a lot of younger Black producers will hear, reporters, which is, we can't hear you. We don't know who the audience is for this piece. You know, there's a lot of subtle language that embodies rejection, also tainted with racism. This idea of you presenting a story about Blackness and someone telling you, we can't hear it. I mean, what does that even mean? If they would rephrase it as, we don't want to hear it. That's actually what I feel like they're saying. Both Hana and I have heard that phrase in some way or another. It often comes out with more podcasts as, we're not sure who the audience is for this, or we don't know how to market this. And for me, those are all excuses.
Code.
Yeah, excuses and code to keep voices like ours and stories like ours not available to listeners. And so when we started The Stoop, we were like, this is our opportunity to do the stories how we want to do them, to speak how we want to speak, right. To think about, like, when people said, who's your audience? We would just say, people that look like us. That was our mission, like people that look like us. And that's how we've been making our stories with that in mind. And that's changed a lot for us in terms of how we create, because we're always just like, we don't need to explain, no explanatory comma needed here. We're just making it.
So far we've talked about situations or instances where you feel almost too Black, but can you tell us about instances where you felt like you weren't Black enough?
I'll let you shrug it. She's like,
It's so interesting. Like, we've talked about this a lot on the stoop, this idea of not being Black enough and what it doesn't mean to quote unquote act Black. And one of the reasons why I wanted to explore this in the beginning was because of my voice. A lot of times I was told I sounded white, and this was not just by white people. This was mostly by Black people. And so one of the first episodes that we did with The Stoop was unpacking this idea of what it means to sound white.
Episode two.
You can find it on thestoop.org. So that was what we were unpacking. Like, why do people say we sound white? Because Hana was also told the same thing. But we're also looking into, like, asking other kids. So we go to a skate park and we ask kids at the skate park, were they ever told they sound white? And they express very clearly their opinions about what that means, and talk to a broadcast journalist who used to be a journalist reporter at KQED, Joshua Johnson. We talked to him about his career and him being told he sounded white. And so what we were unpacking, though, in that episode, and we try to do this quite often in The Stoop, is we're trying to unpack stories about Blackness and things that are said within the Black community and the hurt that is felt when it's said by your own people, when you're being called up by your own people.
What Lilo is saying about, we are talking to ourselves here. We're not talking about a white gaze or race is not the issue here. We are talking about Black people talking to Black people. And so I think another episode that I really related to was, it was called Black Enough. You know, like I said, I grew up in Texas. I didn't grow up around a lot of Black African-American people. I grew up around some Sudanese people, Arabs and Muslims and all different kinds of people like that. And so I missed out on a lot of Blackness by not having African-American friends. And so I grew up, and there's a lot of stuff that, you know, in popular culture or in music that I just didn't like, or it wasn't my thing. But God forbid I open my mouth and say, I don't like Anita Baker songs or anything. See, look at Lila. Look at Lila. And it would be like, how and why? And sometimes I found myself, like growing up, pretending to like stuff so I can be Black. And so in this episode, I talked to this psychologist from Stanford who studies confirmation bias and studies just bias in general. And he goes into this idea that, this idea of pretending to like stuff so as not to be shunned by the group. And we unpack all of that. We also talk to W. Kamau Bell, who is a comedian and host of the CNN show United Shades of America, who has always felt awkward in Black company and on Black stages, and did not like hip hop growing up, you know? And so for us, I think every episode comes out of something that we have felt, something that we have experienced, because we know other people have definitely experienced this. Like, there's gotta be other people, right? And so making these episodes helps them as well to say, hey, thank you for making that episode, which we get a lot. You know, I totally heard my experience. I totally heard stuff that I deal with that nobody else is talking about.
I was just remembering an episode we did where we interviewed Stacey Abrams, and, you know, she went to Spelman, and the episode was about the decision for us not to go to HBCUs.
And you being jealous of people who went to HBCUs.
And me being jealous of people that went to HBCUs because I did not go to one. Hana went to HBCU and then transferred.
For a little bit and then left.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, it was this thing about, did we let down our people because we didn't go to HBCU? And of course, it was around the time that Beyonce did her thing and all that. And we were just like, oh my God, we should have been, we're trying. But
homecoming.
Yeah, we tried. But so it was talking to Stacey Abrams and we were talking to her about her feeling uncomfortable at the campus at Spelman when she first arrived there for multiple reasons. She just didn't, it was things that she had to learn about her Blackness. It's just slang that she didn't even know. And so we talked a lot about like the varying types of Blackness at an HBCU and how it can be intimidating and how it can be something that you're really embraced for. But there are stories about Black people dropping out of HBCUs because they did feel like their Blackness was an issue, or their lack of Blackness was an issue.
And weren't black enough.
Not feeling not Black enough. And so it's something that's embarrassing to talk about, but it happens, you know? And I feel like if we talk about this a little bit more, then, you know, we can open up these conversations for kids that are considering going to HBCUs that grew up in white environments and aren't feeling Black enough. Like maybe they can have a little bit more confidence and realize as well that there are other people that had struggled with the same thing about not knowing like the Black National Anthem. I mean, do we all know the words to the Black National Anthem? Let's raise our hands. Okay. I'm just saying. I mean,
I'm so glad I'm not alone.
I'm so glad that we're all on Zoom.
Yeah, the listeners will never know. As far as they know, everyone's hands were raised.
I raised all my hands for that one.
But it's funny, they always do pass out like the little sheet of paper too when you're about to sing.
Yeah.
They try to prep everybody.
Yeah.
There is a cute little story in that episode of two girls from the African Student Union, and they went to homecoming or something, and everybody got up and sang and they didn't know the words, so they had to like mouth with the people.
Oh my gosh.
Nightmare fuel. That's what makes a Stoop episode.
I kind of wanted to also throw this to you, Dom, too. Have you ever been in a situation where you felt, can you tell us about the situation where you felt like you weren't Black enough? I'm not going to act like we haven't had these conversations before.
I don't know that I've ever been in a situation where I was like, yeah, I feel Black enough. I'm nailing this right now. I mean, honestly, I'm sitting here having this conversation for an episode that was like my idea to like talk to these people that I admire about like not being Black enough. And I don't feel Black enough to be like sitting here having this conversation right now. It's something that I deal with all day, every day. And it's kind of like anxiety. It's like, it's something that I have a generalized version of, and it's all about like how intensely I feel it.
Do you think your generation is harder on itself in terms of Black enough and who's Black? And
I have a theory that like when it comes to different generational things, that I don't know how much harder like one is on the other so much as that I think different generations talk about things more often than other generations. And I think something like this, the more you talk about it, the more awareness you have of it, the more examples you see of it, like, out in the wild.
Because our generation did not talk about this, though. We're just saying. And that's why we felt the Stoop was important, because this...
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we didn't grow up talking about any of this. So, like, I'm kind of envious of y'all's generation a lot.
Yeah, and I think talking about it, it makes... I don't know about you, Nige, but it makes me feel... It makes me feel less alone, but then I'm also like, damn, other people have to feel this way.
I mean, it's like we're talking about it at like 26. That's a little bit later. But like when I was younger, when I was in school, I wasn't having these conversations at all. And I didn't know anybody who was having these conversations. I didn't really hear these conversations anywhere. So, like, I grew up in the suburbs, skater kid. I live in Northern California, too. So I'm also, like, snowboarder kid. Like, my winters, I spend in Tahoe pretty much, like, 24/7. And so I never felt Black enough either until... So every summer, me and my family would go on these cruises. It's called like the Black Cruise. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of it. But it's like Festival at Sea is the actual name of the company. So shout out to Festival at Sea. But it's nicknamed the Black Cruise because it's an African-American themed cruise. I went on one and they'll have like, you know, Fantasia will perform and Charlie Wilson will perform.
I've seen ads for these. That. Yeah.
So we used to go on the Black Cruise every summer. And I remember the first one I went on, I was probably like 15, and it's literally all Black people. I probably saw like one person who wasn't Black throughout the whole time, and it's a full cruise ship, full Carnival cruise ship, full of just Black people for 7 days. And it was definitely like a culture shock for me because people were making jokes about things that I didn't really know about. Like I felt so thrown. But also at the same time, I was like really embraced too. And I felt like it was when I first learned that being Black was cool. And that's like sad to say, but I remember I used to always kind of like belittle myself, or I used to make the Black jokes to try to get ahead of like all the other kids that were in like, you know, the private schools and stuff I went to. But yeah, when I was on that cruise was the first time I was like, yo, being Black is really dope. And I think that shaped a lot of my personality, even like to this day. But that was a situation where I felt I wasn't Black enough, but it was more of an educational experience. And then I started to feel like I was Black enough within like, you know, a short time or whatever from actually being kind of immersed or being in an area where I was around a lot of other Black people.
And you know your parents did that on purpose.
Yeah.
My dad said it like before. He was like, nah, like this is where you're gonna learn like who you are a little bit. And I used to always be like, what do you mean I'm gonna learn who I am? Because like my dad always felt kind of guilty himself. Like he grew up in East Oakland and he and my mom grew up in South Richmond, and which are both highly like Black populated areas. And they always felt kind of guilty for raising us in like all these white areas. But they were really big on always educating me and my brother about like who we were. And it didn't all like sink until I was really around all Black people like that.
And our parents, I'm saying that when I am the parent now, I have a 19-year-old and I have a 16-year-old. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do, right? We move to the places that we think our kids will have the best, right? Like that's just a parental thing. But then you realize all the things that they're missing out on. My daughter, I think, had her first experience like that last Juneteenth. She went to Lake Merritt and felt just like she had so much to say because there was a shooting that day at Lake Merritt. And she said she felt like she was everybody's daughter and everybody's sister. Everybody was looking out for her and everybody was looking out for everybody else. And she was the safest she has ever felt in her life. Mm. And that's Black, like a big hug. Man. Around her.
Yeah.
And so I feel beautiful. Like it's experiences like that, you know? I didn't plan that as a parent. Your parents planned that cruise, that's for sure. Black people will educate you when you meet them and when you spend time with them, even if you've missed out.
And from those experiences, like on the cruise, and I'm sure even like from your daughter's like recent experience, I feel safe around Black people. Like if I walk into a room, I walk into a space, I feel safe when there's a Black person there, because like I always feel like, okay, like there's a unspoken thing between us that it's like stuff hits the fan, like I got you, like we could check in or whatever. It feels like home. I was even telling Dawn before this that Hana, you were my first interview ever, the first time I've ever been interviewed anywhere. And like I went, and then I didn't know, like, I didn't get really prepped like that on who would be interviewing me or anything like that. So I'm, like, super nervous. And even just, like, just seeing your face, though, I did feel like, oh, good, this will be cool. Like, even if I'm horrible, it'll still, like, be, you could tell me I'm horrible, but, like, you know, but I still love you. It's a different feeling.
Oh, for sure.
Hey. This is obviously a huge topic, and there's so much more to this conversation that we didn't want to rush. So we're actually going to continue our chat with Leela and Hana next week. That's right, you can catch part two of this conversation next Thursday on Black Enough Part 2.
Don't miss it.
Adultish is produced by YR Media, a national network of young journalists and artists creating content for this generation. Our show is produced by Georgia Wright, Dominique French, and by me, your boy, Nige Turner.
Our engineer is James Riley.
Our executive producer is Rebecca Martin.
Our interns are Lolly Vasquez and Ichchaka Lira. Original music for this episode created by these young musicians at YR. Christian Romo, Anders Knutstad, Noah Holt, Jacob Armenta, Chaz Whitley, Michael Diaz, Sean Luciano Galarza, and David Lawrence. Music direction by Oliver Cuya Rodriguez and Maya Drexler.
Art for this episode created by Brigado Bautista with these young people at YR, Ardia Michael and Jordan Ferguson. Art direction by Marjorie Massacat. Creative direction by Pedro Vega Jr.
Special thanks to Eli Arberton and YR CEO Kyra Kyles.
We are also proud to be members of Radiotopia by PRX, an independent listener-supported collective of some of the most amazing shows in all of podcasting. Find them at radiotopia.fm. And if you haven't reviewed our show on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to do so. 5 stars is much appreciated.
And you can follow us on all the socials at YR Adultish. And on that note, we'll see you later.
Later.
Radiotopia. From PR.